Masechta Tainis daf Chav Zayin Amid Aleph. Taisis to be maschil. Ima mishores baal mum loy. Af mevarech baal mum loy. Since the next two Diburi and Maschil of Taisvis deal with the Shakla Batari of the Gemara, the give and take of the Gemara extensively. So just to review the give and take of the Gemara in a broader way so we can cover the background behind both Tosos. The Gemara was discussing the halachis of a Kohen concerning the Sias Kapayim, a duchening. And the original discussion was that Kohanim are not allowed to bless the people in a state of drunkenness, which tied into which tefillos we have Nesias Kapayim for, out of a concern that maybe during those tefillah times, such as Mincha, might be a time of drunkenness. But the fact that a Kohen cannot duchen in a state of drunkenness, everyone takes for granted. So the Gemara asks, where does that come from? And at least initially, the Gemara learns it out from Nazir, because Birchas Kohanim is written next to the Parsha of Nazir. And the drasha being that just like a nazir is not allowed to drink wines, so to the kohen before blessing the people is not allowed to drink wines. So then the Gemara says, so let's take that comparison all the way and say that just like a nazir is not allowed to eat grapes either. So a kohen shouldn't be able to eat grapes, and we know that not to be true. To clarify, for grapes, the Gemara uses the word chartzan, where the Torah says in Parshas Nazir that the nazir may not eat chartzan or zog. Forshim have a machlokus, whether chartzan refers to the seeds of the grape and zog to the flesh of the grape, or vice versa. So for summary's sake, we're going to translate the word chartzan as grape, because that's what it's driving at, that even though it's not actually wine, it's still usher for the nazir. So the Gemara says, we learn it out from a different comparison, a different hekish, also comparison sekev, the shor sol avarech bishmo, that Hashem chose to kohanim, to serve in the Mikdash, and to bless with his name. So it compares service in the Mikdash with duchening. So from that comparison, we could learn that just as someone who serves in the Mikdash is not allowed to drink wine, as we learn in Parsha Shmini, that a kohen may not serve in the Mikdash after having drunk wine, but he's allowed to eat grapes. He's allowed to eat chartzan. So too, a kohen who blesses is allowed to eat the grapes and is only prohibited with wine. Then the Gemara asks, if so why not take that hekesh all the way and say that a baal mum, a kohen with a defect, physical blemish, shouldn't be able to bless either, just like a baal mum is pasul avoda? So the Gemara says, no, for that the hekesh to nazir helps us, that just like a nazir, even a baal mum is able to be a nazir, so too a kohen to bless the people can be a baal mum as well, and he's only disqualified from avoda. So on that the Gemara says, why are you using the hekish lakula? Why not make the hekish lachumra? And the Gemara answers, asmachta ninu midrabbanan lakula. The simple reading of the Gemara is that the whole din of Kohanim not being able to duchen in a state of drunkenness is a din derabbanan, and therefore we navigate the hekeshim in a lenient way because we're dealing with din derabbanan to start out with. So the next two tosasin deal with explaining the meaning of this Gemara. First dealing with the initial kasha of how come we don't say that a kohen
who's a baal mum
is pasul
to duchen
because of the hekesh to avoda, to mishores. And within that he's going to get involved in a different discussion about a kohen who changed his religion, or served the avodah zara, and then did tshuva, whether he is now kosher to be a kohen with respect to blessing the people. And the next tosis is going to deal with the conclusion of the Gemara about the hekesh lakula and not the hekesh lachum. So, the first tosis. Again, the Dibur Maschil, Imam Mishareis Baal Mum Lo, Av Mevarech Baal Mum Lo. As we mentioned, the Gemara had asked that once we're already making a hekesh to the Kohen serving in the Mikdash, that he may eat grapes, so why don't we make a hekesh on the Machmir side, that just like someone serving the Mikdash, the Kohen cannot be a Baal Mum, so to the one who duchen shouldn't be able to be a Baal Mum. So, tosis, Rashi-like, explains the meaning of the Gemara. Interestingly, here Rashi is pretty silent and does not explain. So Tosis serves as a substitute Rashi. Pirish, cave and the Alfina Xerishava Mimashares. Since we learn Xerishava from the word Mishares, the word Xerishava here seems to be somewhat out of place. It seems to be more of a hekish. Lasharasol of Orech Bishmo. So since we dash in from Mishares, the fact that you could eat grapes, so Nema, let us also say, Kemo Mishares, that it should also be similar to Mishares in the following way, the Mishares Baal Mum Lo, that a Mishares is possible as a Baal Mum, Saaf Mevorech V'chule. Meaning, a Kohen who blesses, also V'chule should be possible. That's the V'chule. So unto that, the Gemara answers, as we summarized earlier, that we learned from Nazir. Mishani, the Gemara answers, Ha'iskish le Nazir is compared to Nazir V'chule. The V'chule here seems somewhat out of place, because that really is the end of the thought. The continuation of the Gemara is then, why are we comparing all things Lakula? Why don't we compare it to Lachumra? Unless that's what Tosas is alluding to by the Vechule, that the conclusion of the Gemara finally is that we do make the Akeshim Lakula. And therefore, a Baal Mum, according to the conclusion, would be kosher to bless the people, which is a crucial part of Tosas's continuing discussion about the Kohen who was over the Avodah Zarah and then came back. So, that's the first part of Tosas in terms of explaining the Shaka of Tari the Gemara. Now Tosas gets involved in the halacha we briefly mentioned earlier about a Kohen who went off to Derech and then came back. Is he still kosher to Duchen? So, just to map out what Tosas is going to do here, he's going to give a two-part proof that a Kohen who gave up the religion, presumably he was talking about a phenomenon that unfortunately happened already in his day, where some Kohanim would adopt Christianity, and then they would come back to Judaism. Hamir Doso. So, were they kosher or not? So this is actually a Machlokas Rishonim, as we shall elaborate a bit after we finish the Tosas, and Tosas angles toward leniency based on a two-part proof that such Kohanim should be kosher. Part one of the proof is the fact that Kohanim who are Balei Mumim are kosher to Duchen. And that, of course, emerges directly from our Gemara, at least according to the conclusion. As we'll see in the continuation, it is also directly implied by Gemara Megillah. Part number two is that there's Gemara Menachos, that Kohanim who have served the Avodah Zarah, even after they do tshuva, they cannot serve in the Mikdash in Yerushalayim. But nonetheless, they can eat karbanos. The Mishnah there in Masechet Menachos, Kuvtes Amud Aleph, compares such Kohanim to Balei Mumim. Just like Balei Mumim cannot serve in the Mikdash, but they do eat karbanos, so too such Kohanim who served Avodah Zarah and then did tshuva may not serve in the Mikdash, but they may eat karbanos. So, the second part of the proof is that Kohanim, who served the Avodah Zarah and did tshuva, are compared to Balei Mumim. So, since Balei Mumim can eat karbanos, so too Kohanim who served the Avodah Zarah and did tshuva. And here we have another nafkamin of Balei Mumim. Balei Mumim have the ability to bless the people. So too, this is where Tosas fills in, and that's the point of debate in the Rishonim, whether that last step is correct or not, that such Kohanim who served the Avodah Zarah and did tshuva, Tosas assume, in the comparison to Balei Mumim, could also bless the people. So that's the two-part proof. We begin with the first part. Three lines down from the top, Mikan Nira de Balmum Mevorech Birchas Kohanim. From here it appears that a Balmum can indeed bless the people. And what's the proof? From the fact that we see that Ashas wrote a Lilmod Mevorech Mimishareis, that initially the Gemara wanted to learn out duchening from serving the Mikdash, the Rashash takes out the Vav, reads more smoothly, Liv Valmum, concerning a Valmum, that just like you can't serve in the Mikdash as a Valmum, so too you can't bless the people. That was the Havamina, Vidachinale, and we pushed that aside in the conclusion. So Tosas assumes that it's not just the Tachia Baalma, but I just merely push it aside, but it's not really the truth. But that is the truth, that the pushing aside is the truth, that proposed Rasha, that a Balmum should be puzzled to Duchen is incorrect, because we actually compare it to Nazir. And therefore, we say that just as a Nazir could be a Balmum, so to a Kohen who blesses the people could be a Balmum. Im Kain, if so, Nira, Dila Inyan is Yiskapayim, concerning blessing the people, Kohen Balmum, no se kapov, that bottom line, a Kohen, a Balmum, can bless the people. And now Tosas say the first part of their proof concerning the Kohen of Avodah Zarah, Umikan, and from here, Yesh Lochiach, the Kohen Shehemir Doso, no se kapov, that a Kohen who switched his religion, and they point out on the margin, he did tshuva, because that's the context of all the other Tosin that deal with this, can indeed bless the people. It's not talking about why they're still a Christian. The kosher Lisa kapov, and he's kosher to Duchen. Even though, based on the Gemara Menoches, that Kuf Tesmer Aleph, he would be possible to serve in the Mikdash, but it would be kosher to bless the people. Tos continue, velikris batara, and he can also get the first aliyah, kemosha lo hamer, as if he had not changed his religion. Viraya, and a proof, again, first setup is that a Baal Mum is kosher to Duchen, and now Tosis is going to show the Gemara Menachis that such a Kohen who served the Avodah Zarah, changed the religion, is similar to a Baal Mum. Viraya, and the proof is, meha de Kohanim shishim shibaveis chonyo, the Kohanim who served in the house of Chonyo, they should not serve in the Mikdash. What is the house of Chonyo? So historically, in the days of the second Beis Hamikdash, there was a tragic episode where there was disputing different Kohanim as to who should be the Kohen Gadol, and unfortunately there was a lot of Greek influence in terms of who paid the Greeks, or who was hobnobbing with them, was friendly with them, and they would be appointed. So there was a Kohen Chonyo who wanted to be the Kohen Gadol, or thought he was fit to be the Kohen Gadol, and he was not able to get the job, so he ran to Mitzrayim, and he built a replica Beis HaMikdash, and they did Avodah there for quite some time. So that's called Beis Chonyo. In Josephus, they refer to him as Onias. So the Gemara, in a few places, discusses the status of that. So halachically, bringing Karbonos, which were brought to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not for Avodah Zarah. But it was a violation of Shchut Echutz and Halah B'chutz. They would bring Karbonos outside the Mikdash, which is an Issachares. So there were a whole bunch of Kohanim who joined Chonyo. Chonyo, I guess, was serving as the Kohen Gadol there for a while. Maybe even after he died, it survived his death and moved on to a different pseudo Kohen Gadol. So other Kohanim served there. So the Gemara, based on Psukim and the Navi Melachim, derives that such Kohanim, even if they come to Eretz Yisrael and now want to serve in the Mikdash, the Kohanim Sheshim Shebeveis Chonyo lo Yisham ShebeMikdash, they cannot serve in the Mikdash. I will note them Chelek im Acheim kemo Bali Mumim. That's the Mishnah Menachos of Kuf Tesem and Aleph. But they can take a share in the Karbanis, just like the Bali Mumim. So again, that's talking about Kohanim who served Hashem outside of the Mikdash and brought Karbanos, and violated the Isser of Shchut Echutz and Halah B'chutz, slaughtering outside the Beis HaMikdash and bringing Karbanos outside the Beis HaMikdash. But the Sugi there in Kuf Tesem and Aleph extends that as well, perhaps even by Kal V'chomer, to Kohanim who served the Avodah Zarah. That's even worse. But nonetheless, when they do tshuva, so they cannot serve in the Mikdash, but they can eat Karbanos like Bali Mumin. And all of that, Tosis assuming, not quoting the whole Sugi there, but the Kohanim of Beis Chonyo was serving Kodesh Baruch Hu, but that has the same halacha as Kohanim who served the Avodah Zarah and then the Tshuva. So now Tosis puts all together the last three lines. Mashma, dechal avoda shabal mum roi lasos, yasu. That any avoda, any service of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that the Baal Mum is fit to do, that they also were able to do. Who's the they? The they are the Kohanim who served the Beis Chonyo, and the they are the Kohanim who served the Avodah Zarah. So the Mishnah says they're allowed to eat karbanis. It's not a service in the Mikdash, but it's also a form of Avodas Hashem. As the Gemara says, Kohanim ochlim abalam eskaprim. And the Kohanim eat the karbanos. That's also part of the kapara, the atonement. So Tosis extends that to active forms of Avodah, not just eating karbanos, but other forms of service of Kodesh Baruch Hu, namely, the last line of Tosis, v'kohen baal mum no sekapov. A kohen is a baal mum can duchen, as we see from our Gemara. So putting everything together, since a Kohen who served outside the Mikdash improperly, Beis Chonyo, and also a Kohen who served the Avodah Zarah, as the Gemara Menachos makes clear, are both compared to Bali Mumim, so too is the second part of the proof that the Kohen, who unfortunately gave up Judaism, became a Christian, and then came back, is able to duchen. Tosis and Masechet Menachos, as well as Tosis and Sota, Menachos Tav Kuf Tesemer Aleph, as we quoted earlier, and Sota Tav Lama Tesemer Aleph, quote that this was a machloikis rishonim. Indeed, the Sheiltis or Rachoigoin and the Rambam paskin stringently in this regard, as well as a sefer that I'm not familiar with, which is quoted by the Tosis Menachos, the Sefer HaZohir. Not the Sefer HaZohar, but the Sefer HaZohir, one of the collections, presumably of the Chachmei HaTosis, that it's Osir, and that the Kohen who went off the Derech and came back is not even able to duchen. Presumably they hold that eating kachim is a special leniency, but any service in the Mikdash, or even outside the Mikdash, such as blessing the people, is prohibited. But Rabbeinu Gershom, the famous Maor HaGola, one of the Rebbeim of Rashi, as quoted by the Tosis and Sota, as well as the Tshuvas Rashi, that's quoted by the Tosis Menachos of Kuf Tesem and Aleph, were lenient on this, and one of the angles for leniency was mentioned by our Tosis, more elaborately stated in those other two places. Indeed, in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Kuf Chav Ches, the Beis Yosef, of course, quotes both opinions, and in the end, sides on the toward the lenient view that such a Kohen can indeed duchen. Taisim Menachos of Kuf Tesem and Aleph points out, and they point out the same thing in the margin of the Oz V'Hodr, that Tosis brought a proof from our Gemara that a Baal Mum can duchen, because the Gemara only had what Tosis considers to be a fleeting Havamina, that a Baal Mum cannot duchen, based on an erroneous application of the Hekish of a Mishare, someone serving the Mikdash, to a Mavarech. But in the end, that Hekish was negated, because we compare it to the Nazir, that he can duchen. But they point out, Tosis and Menachos, that this seems to be an explicit Mishnah and Megillah that also directly implies that a Kohen Balmum Keduchin, because the Gemara discusses that if a Kohen has defects on his hands or even discoloration on the hands, he cannot Duchin because people are going to stare at it. That will be distracting for those listening into the Birchos Kohanim and cause a Hesach Hadas. They'll take their mind off of the Bracha and they're supposed to concentrate on the Bracha. Alternatively, because we don't want to have the people look at the Kohanim. Machlok is Rashi and Tosis over there as to whether the prohibition of looking at the Kohanim is only relevant for the Mikdash. Because of the Shechina, the divine presence that rests on the hands of the Kohanim, that might only be relevant to the Mikdash. So Tosis prefers the approach that is going to lead to the listeners being distracted from the Bracha. So the direct implication is that there's a specific kind of mum, namely on the hands, that is disqualifying the Kohanim for a side problem, not a fundamental problem that a Kohen Bal Mum cannot duchen. And indeed, if the mum would be in another area of his body which people don't see, or as the poskim discussed it, perhaps nowadays, since the Kohanim customarily cover their hands with the talis, so even the mum on the hands won't be a problem. So what immediately emerges from that Gemara is that a Kohen Bal Mum certainly can duchen. So you don't just need the somewhat indirect proof from our Gemara, where it's a dechia. You could have said the Havamina is correct and the dechia is a dechia ba'alma, but it's also an explicit Gemara Megillah. So that's certainly true that a Kohen Baal Mum can duchen, unless, again, there's special defects that might lead to distraction or to staring at the Kohanim. And again, as we mentioned, Lahalacha, there was a Machloek Zushainer about the comparison between an Oivet Avodah Zarah who did tshuva and the Baal Mum as to whether he is also kosher to duchen, and we rule leniently. The conclusion of the Gemara, as we briefly summarized in our introduction to the previous Tosis, is that after pointing out that we use Nazir as a Hekish Lakula to say that a Kohen Baal Mum could indeed bless the people, so the Gemara asks, so why don't we make a Hekish to a vote in the Mikdash to be Machmir rather than a Kula to the Nazir to be Mekel? So Tosis crystallizes the question of the Gemara by explaining as follows. Amai Chazis to Akshis Lakula, Akish Lachumra. Why are you making the Hekish in a lenient way? Why don't you make it in a stringent way? Pirish. Meaning. My chazis, the makshis coin lenazir, lahakel. How come you compare the coin to the nazir to be lenient, belomar? Kemosh nazir havi balmum, just like a nazir could be a balmum. Kemokain, coin balmum kosher. So too, a coin balmum is kosher. On the margin in the Ozvara, they add from one of the achronim kosher lavarich. A coin balmum is puzzle for a vote in the mikdash, but it's kosher to bless the people. So that's a hekish lakula. Continue, Toysis. The Akshas Lemish Mishares, and you compare to the one serving the Mikdash, again, the second Hekish of Lishar Solavarech Mishmo, that Ma Mishares Mutabachartz, and just like the one serving the Mikdash is able to eat grapes, Avkoin Mavarech Mutabachartz, and so too someone who's saying Birch Kohanim can eat grapes. So all of that is the Hekish Lakula. So Taz just elaborates a bit that the Hekish Lakula is both Hekeshim you are using on the lenient side. You're using the Hekesh Tanazir to teach you that the Kohen Baal Mum is kosher to be Mavarech, and using the Hekesh to Mishares to teach you that the Kohen who's Mavarech can eat Chartzim, can eat grapes. So now the Gemara asks, so why not say exactly the opposite? In the words of Taisvis, Aksha Luchumra, or Akish Luchumra. Why not use both Hekeshim on the stringent side? Pirish, meaning Benema, and we should say the following: the chamosha nazir asa b'chartzon, of coin asa b'chartzon. Just like the nazir can't eat grapes, the coin who blesses shouldn't be able to eat grapes. And now the other hekesh should also be lachumra. Uchamo coin mishareis asa balmum. Just like a coin serving the mikdash cannot be a balmum, af coin mevarich balmum aser. So to a coin who blesses the people cannot be a balmum, and that will be prohibited. In other words, again, that both occasions should be used lachumra. In general, the Gemara has that cloud that whenever you have a possibility of making a Hekish Lakula or a Hekish Lachumra, so you have to make a Hekish Lachumra and not Lakula. And Mefarshim have a debate as to whether that's based on the cloud of Suffolk, the Rice Lachumra, since we don't know which way we should do the Hekish, so we have to be Machmir. Or is that based on fundamental rules of Hekish, that that's the way occasion were given over, that whenever you have a vagueness in a Hekish where you can make a Hekish Lakula or a Hekish Lachumra, so the Midah Shatonah Reshes Ben, that principle tells us that you have to go Lachumra, B'Torah Vaday, not B'Torah Safik, not as a Safik, but rather as a certainty. So that's the debate, how to understand that rule. So that's what the Gemara is presumably asking here. Why are you making a Hekish Lakula? You should make a Hekish Lachumra, either out of doubt, because that's the Midah Shatonah Reshes Ben. And to that, Tosis now summarizes the Gemara, Mishani, the Gemara answers, Asmachta V'chulei. Again, the full language of the Gemara is we have in our Girsa, and the Gvur Sari, one of the Achronim, suggests to change the Girsa. That's why I'm hesitatingly saying our Girsa. Asmach nenenu mi derabanan lakula. The standard approach being that the whole din of a Kohen not duchening in a state of drunkenness is a din derabanan. And therefore, this whole heckish analysis is only on a rabbinic level, on a level of asmachtas. So on that level, we go lakula, so the asmachtas are being presented in a way to present what the din of the Rabbanan are, that the Rabbanan were not gozer on a Kohen from eating grapes, and nonetheless, they did ban him from drinking wine, and all that is a din of the Rabbanan. And they, on the other hand, did allow a Baal Mum. Because min HaTorah, none of that will be usher, a Kohen Baal Mum outside the Mikdash, to bless the people, is not disqualified. He would even be able to eat, drink wine, and all the more so will be able to eat grapes. So therefore, even me, the Rabbanah, when they banned drinking wine, so they didn't ban him from eating grapes, based on Nazir, because that wasn't a real drush. It was all a asmachta to start out with, and they certainly didn't prohibit a Baal Mum, again, in terms of attaching it on the level of asmachta to psukim, so they attached it in the Kula way. Comparing to service in the Migdash that it could eat grapes, and comparing to the Nazir that it could be a Baal Mum. But the real source is rabbinic legislation, with the asmachta just being produced, exactly what an asmachta does, to show an allusion to that rabbinic legislation in the Torah text. So therefore, it doesn't have to follow the rigor of a regular hekish, which would have to go l'chumrah. And therefore here, the Chachamim allowed it even to go to kula, because the real source is the din derabanan anyway. Taisi v'maschil mar savar ikar shira bepeh. The Gemara quotes a rather curious series of Amoraic statements. We first have a statement of Rehuna Mishmuel, Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Akvin is a carbon. That Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, literal reading would be, they prevent the carbon from being Ola Ratzin, meaning you can't be Yotze without them. So are these Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim? So perhaps the simplest shot should be that the Kohanim, of course, are serving the Mikdash, the Levim presumably are singing Shira, and the Yisraelim, as Sugis earlier discussed, are doing the Mamados, praying for the acceptance of the Karbonos. So the simple reading of the statement is that all these three are crucial for the Karbonos to operate. So we can understand Kohanim, that's clear, you need Kohanim for the Avodah. The fact that the Levim singing is Ma'akev is a Chiddush, and the fact that the Yisraelim with the Mamados, that's Ma'akev, is an even greater Chiddush. But that's what it sounds like from the statement of Yehuda Mishmur. Rashi, against other Rishonim, actually states that the Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim are all part of the Mamados, praying for the acceptance of the Karbonos. Then it becomes even more surprising that the Mamados themselves, with the various people in them, the Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim, are so crucial that they Ma'akev the Karbon. In light of this Kasha, several Rishonim quote the Ravid, that Ma'akvin doesn't mean that you're not Yotze the carbon without these various people, but that Ma'akvin we will hold up the carbon if we don't have them. Until we have the Levim singing and the Yisraelim with the Mamados and certainly the Kohanim in the Avodah. Then we have a Braisa that quotes of Shimon Elazar, a somewhat different list. The Girsa that we have is Kohanim, Ulevim, Uchle Shir, Ma'akvin es HaKarbon. Doesn't have the word Yisraelim, we'll come back to that later. But Kohanim, Levim, and musical instruments, all of those are crucial for the carbon. Ma'akvin es HaKarbon. So the Gemara explains, what is the root of the debate between these two lists? And all the more so, although we'll see later the different Girsos, that if the correct Girsa, as the Bach points out, in the statement of Shimon Elazar should be Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim, similar to the first statement of Yehuda Mishmuel, so then the only difference is concerning the Klei Shir. So why does one count the Klei Shir as something that's crucial? That's from Shimon Elazar. And the other one omits the Klei Shir as something that's crucial. So the Gemara says they're arguing about whether Ikar Shir B'Peh or Ikar Shir B'Kli. Again, the literal translation is the main song in the Mikdash. Is that with the mouth, singing in the classic sense of singing? Or is the main aspect of song with instruments? I believe Rashi is quoting Masechta Sukkah as pointing out that if it's with instruments, that means, and Kal V'Chaimer, that it's music with the mouth as well. Either it's Ikar Shir B'Peh and the musical instrumentation that everyone agrees they had, but that's really not a crucial part of the mitzvah, perhaps a rabbinic enhancement. And if you hold the main thing is the musical instruments, so then you could say that that is the main thing and the singing is optional. Or you could say, I think Rashi and Sukkah says that Kal V'Chaimer Shir B'Peh. So how does that tie in? So the statement of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel, who doesn't mention Klei Shir, because for him that's not crucial. Because Ikar Shir B'Peh, the singing is the main thing. Presumably, B'Pshutai, Levim are going to be doing the singing here. And you don't need any Klei Shir. And even though we have it, but it's not crucial. And the statement of Shimon Elazar, who says that Klei Shir is crucial, he holds that Ikar Shira Bechli, that is a crucial part of the mitzvah, maybe the only crucial part of the mitzvah, or at least one crucial part of the mitzvah, in addition to the singing by mouth or peh. So Tosfos also, in a rather cryptic fashion, has the following comment in elucidating this Gemara. As we shall see, depending on how you read this Tosfos, the Tosfos could either be answering Akasha, or he's just acting like a Rashi, explaining what these words mean in terms of Ikar Shira B'peh and Ikar Shira B'kli. So we're going to go for now with the second interpretation, that he's just explaining what the words mean, but the explanation that he gives seems to be rather surprising. So Tosfos writes, Ulechach, therefore, since Ikar Shira B'peh, Hakol Ksherim, Afilu P'sulim, Afilu Mamzerim, Lomar Shira. Since the main aspect of Shira is with the mouth, so all are kosher, meaning not just Levim, but even Psulim, presumably here he's referring to Avadim Knanim or the like, perhaps also including Gerim from Amon and Moab who are not allowed to marry regular Jews. And that I say based on the Mishnah, Masechta Arachin, Daf Yud Amid Aleph, which we'll quote later, that there was one opinion that Avodim were involved in playing the musical instruments in the Mikdash, and as we'll see in Tosfos, perhaps even singing. Tosfos continue, Afilu Mamzerim, even Yisraelim, who are Mamzerim and illegitimate. So all of those are all kosher Lama Shira. They could sing Shira in the Mikdash. Why? The Lohavi Elevipeh, since it's only with the mouth. Simple reading of the Tosfos, jumping ahead a bit, where he's going to discuss Shira B'Kli, that since the mouth, it's not a kli shoreis, it's not a holy vessel, and therefore there's no specific ban on anyone singing. So therefore, anyone could sing. Afilu psulim, afilu mamzerim. Sounds like you don't even need levim. By contrast, ulamanda amar ikar shira b'kli, if you hold that the main aspect of song is with musical instruments, imkein, if so, tzarach shiu kohanim o levim. So the ones playing those instruments have to be kohanim or levim. Why? Ha kli zemer hoya kadosh. Since the instruments were holy, meaning they were clay shoris. This is something other Gemaras, Masech Tesukah and elsewhere, make explicit, that if you hold Ikar Shira B'peh, the clay shoris were just regular chulin musical instruments. They were unsanctified. But if you hold that Ikar Shira B'kli, so just like you had a clay shoris to sprinkle the blood and do other avodas in the Mikdash, so too, the musical instruments were also kadosh, they were also clay shoris. And, Tos says a chiddush, that only Kohanim and Levim are permitted to use clay sharis. So putting it all together, what Tosfos seemed to be driving at, according to the simple reading of Tosfos, is that when the vehicle of song is the human vocal cords, so the human vocal cords are not kadosh, and therefore it could be anyone doing it. But on the other hand, if the main vehicle for song is musical instruments, so then those have to be clay sharis, and the only ones who are allowed to use clay sharis are Kohanim and Levim. So reads the Tosfos according to our Girsa without other creative interpretations. So on this, all the Gedolei Achronim, the Sfas Emes, and the Gevurah Sari, and the Rashash, they all attack. This is a famous Sugya in Erechin, the Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, ultimately based on Psukim. Shira in the Mikdash is called Avoda Savoda, the service of the service. And that is one of the things, it says in Parashat Paloscha, that the Levim were given over for. There were two kinds of Levim, the Levim who were the Meshorim, the gatekeepers, and the Levim who were the Meshorim, that they were the singers. So it sounds like whatever the Shira is, the job is for the Levim, and for no one else. And even as I saw they quote from the Minchas Chinuch, that maybe a Yisrael who does the Avoda of the Levi and sings is not going to be chayef any specific prohibition, but he didn't do the avod of Shira, because that has to be done by a Levi. So therefore they attack and say, how could it be that Tosfos says if Ikar Shira B'peh that everyone's kosher? That you don't need Kohanim, you don't need Levim, you could even have Psulim and Mamzerim. But that's the avod of Levim. That's what it says in Psukim. And that's the Sugyan Erechin, the Yud Aleph Amid Aleph, where we have a Mishnah which quotes three opinions as to who were the ones who were playing the musical instruments in the Mikdash. The first opinion says that the Avodin of the Kohanim were up there or near the Duchen. Duchen here now referring to Duchening of Birchus Kohanim, but where they would sing and play the musical instruments. So the Avodim of the Kohanim would be the ones to do so. And others say that they were Yisraelim who were from Bnei Mishpacha, who had Yichus Mishpacha, who were from good families. And others say that they were actually Levim. So the Gemara explains, what are they fighting about? What is the root of the debate? The root of the debate is that whether the instruments are the Shira or whether they are part of the Shira. If they're part of the Shira, they have to be done by the Levim, because everyone knows, that's the simple reading of the Gemara, that the Levim, they do the Shira. So if you hold that Iker Shira Bekli, send it to Levim, have to be the ones to do it. If you hold, on the other hand, that Iker Shira Bepeh, so the Levim don't have to play the instruments, then you could have the servants of the Kohanim play the instruments, or Yisraelim. And what would the Levim do? Levim would be singing. That's the simple read of the Gemara. Unless you read the Gemara somewhat more creatively, that if the Iker Shira is Bepeh, so then not only could the Avde Kohanim be the ones to play the instruments, but they theoretically could be the ones to sing too. But that's certainly not the simple reading of the Gemara. The simple reading of the Gemara is that the Avodas Avoda, the Avodas Ashira, is definitely done with the Levim. And the question is, what did the Levim have to do? Did they only have to sing, or did they also have to play the musical instruments? So the fact that Tosis, the way it reads, seems to say that if Iker Shira Bepeh, anyone could do it, is very curious indeed. So the Marasha, going with the Pshuto of Tosis, without really addressing how Tosis will learn that Sugya and Erechin, the Fyar Aleph Meralef, and the Psukim Chumash, that the Levim are supposed to be the ones who do the Shira, he gives a greater insight as to how to more carefully read the Tosis. Why is Tosis all of a sudden giving us insight as to who's kosher for doing the Shira? That's not the topic of our Gemara. It's not normally we have Tosis to quote random ideas. This would be important for a commentary in Masechta Erechin, where the headquarters of Shira is. So the Marsha explains that Tosis is trying to answer a hidden question. Namely, that Tosis had the Girsa that we have. And what is that Girsa? That Rav Yehuda Mishmuel said, Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Ma'akvin, Esa Korban. That Kohanim and Levim and Yisraelim are all crucial for the Korban. We explained, simply speaking, that the Kohanim are the ones doing the Avoda, Levim are doing the Shira, and the Yisraelim are doing the Mamados. And then we have a Braisa, the Rishimun Elazar states that Kohanim and Levim and Klei Shir are Ma'akev, and it omits Yisraelim. Why did it omit Yisraelim? Aren't they also crucial for the Mamados? So the Marsha explained that Tosis read the Gemara totally differently. This is with the additions of the elucidating commentary of the Ginzei Yosef quoted in the Oz V'Hodor edition of the Marsha. Namely, that we're not talking about Mamados. Mamados, however significant they are, but they're not crucial. If you don't have the Yisraelim davening for the acceptance of the carbon is still kosher. So what is the Gemara saying then? Rav Yehuda Mishmuel is saying that Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim, they are serving in the Mikdash. And what are they doing? The Kohanim are doing the Avodas HaKarbonis. In addition, the Kohanim and the Levim and the Yisraelim, they're doing the Avodas HaShira. Because even Yisraelim are kosher for Shira. As Tosis is right, according to a simple reading, Afilu Psulim, Afilu Mamzerim, and certainly Yisraelim Ksherim are kosher for Shira. There's no need for Klei Shir, because Iker Shira Bepeh. And you could have Yisraelim involved too, because Iker Shira Bepeh. Because not just Levim who could sing. On the other hand, Rav Shimon Elazar is assuming that Iker Shira Bekli, that you need musical instrumentation. So that's why he writes a Klei Shira Ma'akev. Ah, once you have Iker Shira Bekli, so that's why he omits from the list Yisraelim. Because once you need the musical instruments as a crucial part of the Avodah, so those are Klei Shoreis, they are holy Base of Migdash utensils. So it's Kohanim Levim. They're the only ones who can handle them. As Tosis right at the end. Shehu Kohanim O Levim. Kohanim, of course, is doing the Avodas HaKarbonis as well, but they go to do Shira. Parenthetically, this is also very curious, because here we have Tosis saying in the second possibility, that Iker Shira Bekli, that Kohanim are also kosher v'shira. The simple reading of the Psukim is on a Levim a kosher v'shira. The Sefer Chinuch I saw over Shabbos seems to say that Kohanim who did the Avodas HaLevi is a Chayiv Misa B'dei Shamayim. So Tosis assumes, certainly not. Kohanim are able to do the Avodas HaLevi of singing, presumably because every Kohen is also a Levi, even though every Levi is not also a Kohen. Another Chiddush of Tosis. And it's very tempting to verify the Marsha's Pshat, because Lechora, that's where exactly he got it from our Gemara. Kohanim Levim, a Klei Shir. According to Tosis' reading of the Gemara, that they are the ones who are playing those musical instruments, and that's why Tosis mimicked Shiyu Kohanim Levim in order to play those musical instruments. So this is the Marsha's Pshat, verifying that very, very unusual read of the Tosis, that if you hold Iker Shira Bepeh, that even a Yisrael is kosher, and if you hold Iker Shira Bekli, only a Levi's kosher, but also a Kohen, and not a Yisrael. So that part that not a Yisrael, but Iker Shira Bekli, is certainly clear. But the fact that a Kohen should be kosher is difficult, and the fact that if you hold Iker Shira Bepeh, that a Yisrael should be kosher is all the more difficult. In order to align Tosis with the standard understanding of the Psukim and the Gemara and Erechin, the Yud Aleph and Aleph, so the Achronim come up with creative rereads of the Tosis, and that he didn't really mean literally what the words say. So the Rashash reads it as follows, and according to all these reads, it's not trying to answer a kash on the Gemara. As the Bach points out, it's very likely, and that's the point out from manuscripts, that even in the Braisa of Shimon HaLazar, it should really read Kohanim Levim Yisraelim HaKleishir. It's not talking about the Yisraelim playing the Kleishir, it's talking about the Yisraelim in their role as Mamados, not as in terms of singing or playing the musical instruments. So according to that, Tosis, as we said earlier, is not answering a kasha, but he is just presenting some random bits of information about Shira B'Peh and Shira B'Kli. So how do you read that according to that approach? So to quickly read the Tosis again, Lachacha kol ksherim, afilu psulim, afilu mamzerim, lomar shira de lohavi ela b'peh. It doesn't mean to actually sing the songs b'peh. It means lomar shira, to say the shira, meaning to do what is the shira. Now, what is the shira? In the context, we're talking about playing the musical instruments. Even though that is not the main biblically mandated shira, but that's what they're allowed to do. In other words, Tosa's whole orbit is, are psulim allowed to play musical instruments? Similar to the Gemara Erechin. So, if you hold it ikra shira b'peh, then even the psulim and the mamzerim could say shira, meaning they could play the musical instruments. Why? The lohavi ela b'peh, because the biblically mandated shira, the ikra shira, is b'peh. Even though it's a forced reading, but that's what the Rashash is willing to swallow in order to make Tosas fit with the psukim and the gemaras. One of the other achronim quoted here in the Ozva Hadar, a quote by name, a quote, Amara Koyin, that maybe we should change the vav in lomar to a zayin. In which case it reads, Afilu psulim, afilu mamzerim, al kosher, lizamer shira, to play shira. Okay? Not the simple way to speak about that. A lot of times it's nagain, but it's referring to playing the musical instruments. To lahavi ala bepeh, since the ikar shira is only bepeh. So that's the other school to try to align Tosis with the simple pshat. Be that as it may, whatever the pshat is in Tosis, certainly we wouldn't follow the curious read of Tosis. And Lalacha is quoted by the Rambam in Hilchas Klei Migdosh, that only Levim are kosher to do Shira. We actually paskin ikar Shira b'peh, so they're the ones who have to do the singing, and the musical instruments can be played by others. Masechta Tainis, Daf Chof Zayin Mebeis, Tosis Yemaschel Rav Omar Doileik. To review the background of the Gemara discussed that the Kriyas HaTorah for the Mamados, which was in the Maaseh Bereishis, the days of creation, so the Aliyos for those readings was sometimes somewhat problematic, because one of the basic rules of Aliyos is that each Aliyah has to have at least 3 psukim to it, and we're also not supposed to begin less than 3 psukim away from a parsha break, either parsha stuma, a closed parsha, parsha psucha, an open parsha within the parsha satorah. And we're also not supposed to end an aliyah less than 3 psukim away from a parsha break. So when you have a parshia, to use the modern Hebrew word, the small parsha of 6 psukim, you could break that up into 3 and 3 for 2 aliyos, or more than 6 psukim as well. But if you have a parshia that only has 5 psukim, so you'd have to read all of it for one person. Sometimes you don't have that option, as we shall see in the continuing discussion, because you have to somehow squeeze out 3 aliyos between a parsha that has 5 psukim and, let's say, another parsha that has 4 psukim. So if you have to squeeze 3 aliyos out of those 2, so you're stuck, because the 5 can't be split neatly into 2 portions of 3:3. So we have machlokas in Rav and Shmuel. Rav says that under such circumstances, you should read 3 psukim from the 5, and then even though you're ending less than 3 psukim away from the parsha break, because there are only 2 psukim left, but that's the best you could do. Then the second aliyah will have to back up a pasuk, even though by doing so you're starting less than 3 psukim from the beginning of a parsha, but you have no choice. And then once you back up that pasuk, so then again the first one will be reading psukim 1, 2, 3, and the second one will be reading psukim 3, 4, 5. So that's called, in the language of Gemara, Doleg, and that is Rav's view. Shmuel says that that option is not valid because of the Gzeira of Mishum and Achnosim Vayotzin, which we'll see in the next Tosfos, Bezrat Hashem. So he says, Posek, that you should read from that 5 Pasuk Parsha, 2.5 Psukim for the first Ola, and 2.5 Psukim for the second Ola. And Rav doesn't like that option because you're not supposed to split a Pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't split into 2. So this Tosfos, Rav Amadoleg, is divided into 3 parts. First just gives the simple pshat in the Gemara, which is also explained by Rashi, which we briefly explained as well. And then,
secondly,
quotes the Rivan, the son-in-law of Rashi, to analyze a certain vexing problem as to why don't we solve the Aliyos on Rosh Chodesh, which also requires some kind of fancy maneuvering, in a much simpler way. And thirdly, Tosis deals with the issue of how come we don't have a maftir for Shabbos, similar to what we have for Yom Tov, where we read about the Korbanos Musafim. Okay, so Tosas first pshat, Rava Medoleg, Pirish, Arishon, Korei, Merosha, Parsha, Gimel, Psukim. Again, we're talking about a Parsha that has five Psukim. For the first one, we'll read the first three Psukim, Psukim 1, 2, 3. Vasheni, Shein lo kiyem, Shnei Psukim. And the second Oleh that only has two Psukim to go, till the end of the Parsha there, Psukim 4 and 5. And he certainly needs more than two Psukim to have an Aliyah, because he needs at least three. So, Tosas continue. Medaleg, Pasuk Echad. You jump back by one Pasuk. Vekore, Mimasha, Kararishan. And you read that Pasuk again from that which the previous Ola, the first reader, had read. So again, in our example, first reader reads 1, 2, 3. Second reader reads 3, 4, 5. So now, what Tosas is more interested in here, Allah lamaisa, because we don't do mamados anymore. V'cheinami b'rosh echadoshim, and the same is true for Rosh Chodesh. This is a famous sugya Masechta Megillah in the third parak, where the Gemara asks how exactly we navigate the psukim on Rosh Chodesh. And there, to recall, we have eight psukim of the Parsha Satamid, and we have two psukim of the Karbonos Musaf of Shabbos, and then we have five psukim of the Karbonos Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. And on Rosh Chodesh, as we all know, there are four aliyos. So even though you got lots of psukim to go around, total of 15, so you certainly have enough psukim to have three psukim each. 4 times 3 is 12, so 15 is more than 12. But nonetheless, the breakup of the parashas doesn't quite work, because since the breakup is 8 to 5, so then we have a conundrum as to how to break it up. Because if we break up the first parasha into two equal portions of 4-4 for the first two aliyos, so then you get stuck with the last two aliyos, because you can't have someone just read the two psukim of the Musaf of Shabbos, so he's going to have to dip into the other parasha of Rosh Chodesh, and he can't just read one pasuk, because you can't end the aliyah less than three psukim away from the beginning of the parasha. So the third Oleh is going to have to read two psukim from Shabbos, and then three psukim from Rosh Chodesh, which is then going to give you only two psukim left till the end of the parasha Rosh Chodesh. To recall, that only had five psukim. So basically we're stuck. There are other breakups, but none of them work. So the Gemara in Megillah, to ask this question, seems to end off by saying we should follow the Doleg approach, which is the approach here quoted in the name of Rav, as opposed to the Posik approach of splitting a Posik into two of Shmuel. And the way we break it up traditionally is the first parsha of eight psukim. So we read three for the first Ola. So that will be psukim 1, 2, 3. The second Ola is going to be Doleg back one Posik. So he's going to read psukim 3, 4, 5. And the third Ola is going to read psukim 6, 7, 8. And that rounds out the parsha of the Talmud, and then he's going to add on two more psukim of the Musaf of Shabbos. So a total of five psukim, and not upsetting any of the rules. You read at least three psukim, and you didn't end nor begin within less than three psukim from the beginning or the end of a parsha. And then you have the five psukim of Rosh Chodesh to gloriously read for the last Ola. That is the classic minhag. As some of you might be familiar, there's a minhag Agroa where it's a little more creative in terms of skipping around. You actually skip back three psukim, but that's not a topic for now. So let's assume that Tosas went to the standard minhag, and that's what Tosas is noting here, that v'chein nami b'rosh chadashim medalgin, that Allah l'maisa, we follow Rav's approach of jumping back that pasuk, that third pasuk, which is read both for the first Ola and the second Ola. So now Tosas has a kasha on Rosh Chodesh. Hiksha Rav Yehuda Bar Nosson, that's the Rivan, who famously wrote the commentary on Makis when his esteemed father-in-law Rashi HaKodesh stopped writing on Masechta Makis in the middle of the third perek. So he asked the following, Amai Medalgin, why do we have to skip around on Rosh Chodesh? Just add psukim. Amai Eino Kori Lamala, Beparsha, why can't we read earlier on in Parshas Pinchas? The Parshas HaTomid, together with the Karbonos of Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, are in the middle of the Parsha. There's plenty of psukim beforehand, so why not just start the Kriyas HaTorah for Rosh Chodesh earlier, and you'll have plenty of psukim to go around without having to skip. And it's clear from our Gemara that that would be an option of choice wherever possible. The Gemara, for example, on the top of Chav Ches Mar Aleph, speaking about some random Kriyas HaTorah, says, Shani Hosam Dislei Ravcha. Wherever you have the ability to expand the Aliyah, to read more Psukim from a subsequent section of Psukim, so you should do so, rather than relying on Medaleg of Rav or Posek of Shmuel. That's the Rivan's Kasha. Now, there seems to be an obvious answer to this question of the Rivan, and that is clear from our Gemara. Let's take the Mamados, for example. So on the first day, you read day one and day two. So why not just solve the problem by reading on day one, day two, and day three? And you'll be able to get your three aliyos that way. And on day two, you'll read day two, day three, day four. And you'll get your three aliyos that way without having to resort to any gymnastics of jumping back, of doleg, or posek, of stopping in the middle. So the answer the Gemara seems to be assuming between the lines is that you want to only read the relevant Kriyas HaTorah. And even though the Mamados are all about Ma'aseh Bereishis, as we pointed out, that in the Gemara, that Karbonos are that which keeps the world going. So therefore, we read the Ma'aseh Bereishis. But we want to be as close to the day that we're holding at as possible. So on day one, we don't want to read day three. It's bad enough we have to read day two. We don't want to go to another topic. So how could the Rivan suggest that we should broaden the Kriyas HaTorah of Rosh Chodesh by reading a Parsha earlier, before the Parsha Satomid, but has nothing to do with the Rosh Chodesh? So I believe that that's exactly why Tos now continues, the Rivan continues, to show that didn't seem to concern us on Shabbos Chol Hamoed. So we continue with that counterproof. The fourth line of Tos is the end of the line, the Habi Shabbos, B'chol Shol Moed, on Shabbos Chol Hamoed, and that's true both for Pesach and for Sukkot. Korehu Me're'ei Ato Omer Alai, which is about the period of Rotzon, when Moshe Rabbeinu achieved at least partial forgiveness of the Chet Egel. So we start from Re'ei Ato Omer Alai. Avo Pishe Ikara Parsha, Eina Maschela Eskiim Mipsolecha. Even though the main Torah reading should have been from the phrase beginning Psolecha. Now that main Parsha being Psolecha, that's relevant to Pesach. As the Gemara points out at the end of Masechta Megillah, there are specialized readings for Pesach. Each day has a different Torah reading, and there's a mnemonic device, without getting involved in that now, but the mnemonic for the third day of Chol Hamoed is Psol. Psol b'madbara, b'madbara is b'pesach sheni, b'midbar sinai, and Psol is Psolecha, when Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to carve out the second luchos. So that's written a number of psukim after Eyatol Merilai. So on Chol Hamoed, when the third day of Chol Hamoed falls out in the weekday, so then we start from Solacha, culminating with the end of that section that briefly mentions all of the Shalosh Regalim. And there's certainly enough psukim to go around to have four aliyos. On Shabbos Chol Hamoed, we have to have seven aliyos. And just relying on the amount of psukim that you have in Solacha, we're going to run out. There aren't 21 psukim in that sequence of psukim there. So you'd have to start jumping back, and that's never ideal. So what do? We pad it by backing up to the psukim Re'ei Ato Omer Alai. So at first glance, it seems to be the way to read the Tosis. The Rivan is troubled by, yeah, but you can't do that because it's not Me'inyan Hayom. So you see that in order to save yourself from having to do Doleg and skipping back, you'll pad the Kriyas HaTorah even with psukim that are not relevant. So if we do that for Shabbos Chol Hamoed Pesach, then we should do that for Rosh Chodesh as well. So then Tosis answer that, again, this is my understanding of Tosis in terms of appreciating the Kash and the Teretz, that the extension of Re'ei is not really just random psukim. It is somewhat related to Psalacha. But to add in psukim before the Parshas HaTamid, totally not related to Rosh Chodesh at all, and therefore we can't do that. Say Tosis. V'yishlomar. The Mishamachi Ukore Re'ei B'Parshas Shalmala, that's why we are able to read Re'ei, psukim before Psalacha, L'fishakolos HaParsha Mishtoi B'chad Inyana, because that entire Parsha is referring to one topic. I presume what it means is related to Psalacha. Of a Parsha to Rosh Chodesh, but concerning the portion of Rosh Chodesh, earlier is not in any way the same topic, literally one topic, with the Kriyas HaTorah of Rosh Chodesh and its theme. Therefore, ain't no korei b'parsha shalmalo. You don't have the ability to read earlier psukim. Ella doleg. The only option is to skip around, as we said earlier, to jump back at least one pasuk. Just to elaborate a little bit as to what this Teretz is saying here, especially the way we suggested that Lechora, the Kasha, doesn't really make sense because it's clear from the Gemara that we cannot pad with random sukkim unless they're somehow relevant. And that the Havamina was that Re'ei was not really related, and the Maskana is it is somewhat related. So how is that? So as we mentioned before, starting from Re'ei, it's all about the appeasement of the Egel Azov. So Re'ei Atom Merilai is Moshe Rabbeinu pleading before HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should forgive the Jews for the sin of the Egel. And unlike the divinely threatened punishment of the fact that Hashem will no longer lead Klal Yisrael, he's going to send a Malach. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, Re'ei Ato Omer Alai, Ha'alas Amazeh, you told me to take the people out of Egypt, and you didn't tell me who you're going to send. You didn't tell me you're going to send an agent. I thought I was going to be your presence directly. That needs analysis. What does it mean that Hashem goes directly or sends an agent? Either way, Hashem runs the world and certainly looks out for Klal Yisrael. So that, you have to check the Mefarshim there as to the depth of that conversation. And then Moshe was answered in the positive that Hashem answered his prayers. And then you have the carving of the Luchos. Okay, so that's a new subtopic. So it's not directly related. And the ultimate answer of Tosis is no. Broadly, it is related, because it's all about appeasement of the eagle. First, Moshe ben Davins, and he's answered in the affirmative. And then, Hashem tells him to carve the Luchos again, undoing the damage of the Chet HaEgel to some extent, where the Luchos are broken. And that leads all the way up to the Psukim dealing with the Moedim, and those are also related to the Moedim. Because if they're not related to the Moedim, then we don't really have an answer here, because they all have to be Mechad and Yona. Not just that Re'eh should be related to Psalacha, but Re'eh and Psalacha both have to be related to the Moedim. Because the Moedim, that's the star of the show, which is why we're reading it on Shabbos Chol HaMoed, or Chol HaMoed without Shabbos. So how is that the case? Toz doesn't really spell it out. Perhaps he's driving at something along the lines of the Ramban, who points out that after the Chet HaEgel, the bris between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael was broken, and Hashem recreated that bris, and part of that bris are the Moedim. So the appeasement of the Chet HaEgel, moving to the Chiddush HaBris, moving to the Moedim, are all one topic. That seems to be, even though it's adding quite a bit into the Tosis, but it has to be Chad and Yana, starting from the baseline of what we are supposed to have as our Kriyas HaTorah, similar to Rosh Chodesh. Perhaps the Kasha the Rivan was based on the fact that you can't piggyback on the piggyback, meaning the star of the show is the discussion of the Moedim. And Psalacha is related, as we discussed from the Ramban, because that relates to the forgiveness of the Egel leading up to the Chiddush HaBris, leading up to the Moedim. But Re'eh Ato Omer Elai is related to Psalacha, but it's not really related to the Moedim. So that is an Inyan Echad with the thing that's related to the Moedim. So the kasha was that that shouldn't really be called an Inyan Echad, and the conclusion is that no, that that's okay, that as long as, let's say, you have a section A and B that are related, and that's the core Kriyas HaTorah, so even if you have a section C that's related to section A, even though it's not really related so much to section B, that that's also called Inyan Echad. Oh, so now we go back to Rosh Chodesh, and what do we read? I read Parshas HaTamid, I read Shabbos, and we read Rosh Chodesh. How are those related? So the Rishonim and Masechet Megillah explain that Parshas HaTamid is brought every day, including Rosh Chodesh. So that could be considered relevant to Rosh Chodesh. Shabbos sometimes falls out on Rosh Chodesh, so that could also be considered relevant to Rosh Chodesh. And Rosh Chodesh, of course, is related to Rosh Chodesh. So that's Olchad and Yonah. But if we're going to start reading earlier, which is about Moshe Rabbeinu asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to appoint a leader after Moshe Rabbeinu's Petira, so that has nothing to do with Rosh Chodesh at all. So that wouldn't be Chad and Yonah.
It's not even related to the extended Parshas, so Parshas HaTamid or Shabbos.
So this is Tosis's answer as to why we can't do that and just pad it with random sukkah. So now the third part of Tosfos is trying to answer the kasha of why we don't have a maftir for Shabbos, just as we have on Yom Tovim, where we read the Karbonos of the Yomtiv, so why don't we do the same on Shabbos to read the Psukim of Shabbos? So Tosfos now explains. When we say Raya L'minageinu, and the above is a proof to our custom, Aho de'lo karinan b'chol Shabbos v'Shabbos, parsha shel Shabbos. On that which we don't read every single Shabbos, the Parsha of Shabbos, meaning the two Psukim that we read in Parsha Pinchas, of course, and in the Kriyas HaTorah for Rosh Chodesh. Kamo Shana Osen B'Yamtif, as we do in every other Yamtif, Shana Koran Parsha Lefi Ma'ora, that we read Parshas according to the event. With Yom Tovim, of course, that will be the Karbonos Musaf. So why don't we do that for Shabbos? The Tos explained, based on the approach of the Rivan, that you can't add random Psukim. Because the Parsha of Shabbos only has two Psukim. So that's not enough for an Aliyah. You need three. And now, why don't you pad it? The Ein Lomer Shana Daleg La'el. You can't say that we should jump back earlier and then pad it with the earlier Psukim. The Lohavi Mechan and Yonah. Because it's not the same topic. This answer is somewhat difficult. Because we mentioned earlier that Rosh Chodesh can be padded with the Parashas HaTamid and the Parasha of the Musaf of Shabbos, because they are somewhat related. Parashas HaTamid is brought every day, and the Musaf of Shabbos could sometimes be brought on Rosh Chodesh too, because it could be an overlap. So the same thing here, to say that Shabbos is somehow connected to Rosh Chodesh, because sometimes Rosh Chodesh falls out on Shabbos, that's too much of a stretch. Because every six or so Rosh Chodeshim fall out on Shabbos, so it's connected to Shabbos more. But it's most of the Shabbos of the year don't fall out on Rosh Chodesh. So it's much less connected in that direction. But why not read the Pesukim earlier? Parshas HaTamid, as we said, Parshas HaTamid talks about Karbanos that are brought every day, including Shabbos. So why couldn't you read that earlier Parsha? So Tzorchin, how come it couldn't have been padded with the earlier Parsha, Parshas HaTamid? So Tos is just, again, leaving aside the unanswered question, sure there are answers to it, and it's missing something. But based on the Rivan, that you can only have things that are relevant, we understand why we cannot have a maftir for the Pesukim of Shabbos. It's really a two-part answer. We start with the fact that Shabbos only has two Pesukim, but why not add more? And there the answer is because it has to be from the same topic, and we can't do that. Just to round this out, Taisus of Megillah, Daf Chav Gimel and Aleph, also called by the Rush there in the third parak as well, of Megillah, give two other answers why we don't have the maftir of the Karbanos of Musaf of Shabbos. One answer is because if you did that, since Daf Torah always follows the theme of the maftir, so you'd always have to have pretty much the same Haftorah dealing with Shabbos. It wouldn't have variety. So that's why Chazal did not ordain that, to allow for multiple Haftorahs from different themes, to give over different messages, presumably throughout the year, of the Musar and history contained within the Tanakh. The other answer given is that Chazal only ordained to read the Karbanos of the Moedim because that comes to atone for our Avera. The reason we bring a Kor Mechatas on the Moedim, because it's supposed to be Mechapar on Averos. But the Korbonos Ola of Shabbos are not meant for Kapara of Averos, the Talmud of Sin, and therefore it's out of the purview of that Takonas Chachamim. These are the three famous senses that are given as to why we don't have a Maftir of the two Psukim for Shabbos, one given by Tosis, because it's too few Psukim, and we can't pad it out with other Psukim, because it doesn't belong there. It's not Charan Yana. The other one, because we only focus on things that have to do with Kapara, in terms of the Musafim, that's why we only read the other Yom Tov and not Shabbos. And the third is we'd have to have the same Maftir, or the similar themed Maftir every week. As we mentioned in our introduction to the previous Taisus, the Gemara quotes the objection of Shmuel to Rav Shita that when you have not enough psukim to read to fit into two aliyahs of three and three, so the second ole will jump back a pasuk doleg. And Shmuel had posek because of gzeira mishem anachnasin v'ayoytzen. So what does this phrase mean? So Tosfos, similar to Rashi, explain as follows. Pirish, she'anachnasin, shelo ro'u, and here the Bach changes the next word to harishon, because we're dealing with the first ole, and not the first several olim. Again, pirish, meaning, she'anachnasin, this is the gzeira of the nachnasin, shelo ro'u harishon shekara gimel psukim, they did not see that the first one who got the aliyah read three psukim, the yiru, hasheni, and they will see the second ole, shekore pasuk echad milmala, that he's reading one pasuk earlier, Yomru, they will say, Sharishon Lokara Ela Shnei Psukim, that the first Ola only read two Psukim. And as Rashi elaborates a bit, and he will think that it's perfectly legitimate to give an Aliyah of two Psukim, and the language of Rashi, Yetzim, is a Churva, that'll lead to literally a halachic disaster of people perhaps becoming the Gabbai, I guess, and they'll allow the Ola to only have two Psukim. To elaborate a little further, just with numbers, so again, dealing with, let's say, a parshia of five psukim, so if the first ole indeed read three psukim, psukim 1, 2, 3, and then the second ole is going to read psukim 3, 4, 5, so the nichnas, the nichnasim, the ones who enter shul late and see the second aliyah reading psukim 3, 4, 5, will look back to the beginning of the parsha and see only two psukim, and they will erroneously think that the first ole only read two psukim, and hence the mistake that will be made. Now Tosis proceeds to explain the second half of Shmuel's objection, v'hayotzin, five lines on the bottom, v'hayotzin, meaning, k'sheharishon korei shlosha psukim, when the first one reads three psukim, v'eino mishayer ela shnei psukim, and he only leaves over two psukim. Again, in our example, he reads psukim 1 through 3, and he leaves over psukim 4 and 5. So ika gzeras yotzin. So now there is a gzera of those who leave the shul at that point after the first aliyah. The savri, since they will think erroneously, hi sheni, that the second one that's going to be called up after they leave, sagile bishnei psukim, that it's sufficient for him just to read two psukim, namely psukim 4 and 5. Whereas in reality, what would have happened is, according to Rav's model of doleg, the second ole is actually going to read three psukim, except he's going to go back a pasuk to pasuk 3 and read psukim 3, 4, 5. As you mentioned, in the context of the previous Tosis, this gzera of Mishem HaNechnosin V'Hayotzin is not just Shmuel's objection to Rav Shita of Doleg, of skipping back a pasuk.
But everyone agrees that this is the basis for the halacha, that in general, when you're not tight for squeezing in a whole bunch of aliyahs into very few psukim, as to why it is that we have to begin an aliyah no less than three psukim away from the beginning of a parsha, and we have to end an aliyah no less than three psukim away from the end of a parsha, precisely because of this gzeira of nechnosin v'hayotzin. The chiddush of Shmuel, again, is that we're going to apply that even here, and therefore disallow doleg, and Rav would counter to that here, the option of posek is not acceptable because we can't split a posek in two, and therefore we have no choice but to forego that gzeira of nechnasin v'yotzin and actually do doleg, because here we have no choice.